Now I'm going to talk about the prevalence of male sexual assault in Virginia. Sexual assault in men is usually underreported and unrecognized. And nationwide, one of every 33 men are victims of sexual assault or completed or attempted rape. Approximately 1.2 rapes per thousand happen among men in the United States. And male sexual assault is most prevalent among minors, particularly under the age of 18 years of age. And 71% of reported rape, according to the national NVAWS, victimized before the age of 18. I think the biggest problem is the beliefs or the myth that's actually existing. A lot of people believe males rarely are sexually abused. And also, a lot of people believe that also abuse has minimal effect on males, and men are self-reliant, able to defend themselves. So as a result of that, a lot of the studies really didn't focus on men until recently. And currently there are few studies that have been really looking at male sexual assault. However, many are clinic-based, basically among those who came seeking services. And also they focus more on severe form of assault, missing full spectrum of the problem. And also usually we have inadequate sample size because we look at a few people at a time, so looking at other factors is usually impossible. As a result, we needed to do additional studies. Virginia Department of Health looked at the situation and wanted to determine the prevalence of sexual assault among men. And actually we did it for both men and women, but in this study I'll just present the men. Of sexual assault in Virginia. And also we wanted to look at what are the factors affecting men's sexual assault, and also what are the correlates, and also look at the impact. In this study we looked at 705 males, and we used an independent equal probability sampling to draw the sample, and we conducted a telephone survey, which was a random digital dial, which was conducted between November of 2002 through February of 2003. And at the time, we asked for randomly selected male of the household based on their recent birthday. And to determine and also increase our participation, there were up to 15 calls made to each individual household. And as you know, it's getting more and more difficult getting phone surveys done, mainly because a lot of people really don't answer their phones, or they have screening methods and also use only cell phones. And as a result of that, we had to do extreme measures. And also when we have success in talking to those people, we gave them the choice of a male interviewer or a female interviewer, because we really, because there is no study done, we don't know which one yields a better response. So we wanted the respondent to be very comfortable. We conducted a very thorough interviewing techniques training, and also we provided training in just in case in conditions like emotional distress, how to handle those situations. So we really were ready for that. And we also have provided a toll-free number to call back just in case if that time is not a good time. And also we tried for those who didn't have the time to do it, we tried to call them back again and to try to converse the refusal. However, despite all that attempt, the response rate was only 21% in this population. For this purpose, for this study, we used the instrument was adapted from national survey, two national surveys actually, the National Women's Study, and also the National Violence Against Women Survey, and also the Washington State Sexual Assault Survey. After we adopted it, we pre-tested it, and it really involved a lot of discussion to pick which questions are better for us, and also which questions to answer and which would yield us what we needed for our population. And we put it in a computer-assisted telephone interviewing system, and the questionnaire was programmed using a computer-assisted survey execution system. That way, it was confidentiality was really assured, and so that we made sure that the respondents really feel comfortable. Of course, we obtained VCUIRB to conduct this study. Questions included in the study were lifetime and past year sexual violence experience, perpetrator characteristics, consequences of sexual assault, help-seeking behaviors, lifetime experience of other traumatic events, perception of personal safety, availability of services, and perception of community responses to sexual assault. So it was really a very comprehensive survey. And it took the survey took about 25 to 30 minutes. Questionnaire basically began with more general question, and then we went on to violence and victimization question. The reason we did that was because we wanted them to feel comfortable, and we wanted to make sure that people really don't drop out in the middle. Once we have that rapport built up, then people would be more comfortable to talk to us. In the sexual assault questions, that's really our main question, where forced to have sex, oral sex, anal sex, forced sex with objects, which is really going to the rape, attempt rape, sex when the victim was unable to give consent due to heavy alcohol consumption or in drugs. And also we included questions on non-forcible sex, which is rape during childhood and sexual molestation under the age of 18. So just to give you a sample of the question that we asked, regardless of how long ago it happened or who did it, has a man or boy, woman or girl ever made you have sex by using force or threatening to harm you or someone close to you? And if you need this question, I'll be happy to share with you the whole screening question. So sexual assault was defined to include, especially for our purpose here, includes rape, attempt rape, inappropriate touch of the breast, buttock, in genital area, inability to consent, which is the alcohol use and the drug use, non-forcible child rape and child molestation. We also included demographic variables, social demographic variables, depression measures, suicide ideation, drug use and alcohol use. And then for data analysis, we conducted frequency distribution, and also we did a crude analysis, and odds ratios were calculated, and we conducted a multiple logistic regression. So we had complete data for the 705 respondents, and the average age of the population was 47.2 years. This is the current age during the interview. And the majority were white, 78%, and they had more than high school education, which was about 53.1%. The earnings were above 50,000 annually for 56% of the population, and the majority were married, which is 71.3%. And to just give you an idea, because of the low response rate, you may wonder, was it really a representative sample of the Virginia? And I don't show the data here, but it was pretty much representative. It wasn't really off in many ways, so that gave us some comfort. So the biggest finding was that the lifetime prevalence of sexual assault in Virginia was 12.9%. So that's a pretty big number. And victimized in previous 12 months was 0.1. And we only interviewed those who are 18 years of age and above. So the previous 12 months is actually, that's why it's low. And it's actually comparable with the national data. And then when we break down with the different types of sexual assault, the overall was 12.9 in terms of prevalence. For rape, it was 3.5. Attempt rape, the prevalence was 2.7. Inappropriate touch was 2.6. Unable to consent was 2.1. But the majority, as you see, the prevalence is high for children under the age of 18. So when you look at child molestation was 6.4%, and non-forcible child rape was 4.5%. And this actually doesn't exclude each other, because if a person has been victimized twice, then they are counted in both places. So in terms of determining the prevalence. And this table looks at the age distribution and the mean age and the median age. I wanted to show you both the mean and the median age because the data was not really that skewed. A lot of times, you know, when you have skewed data or when you have like an outlier or a number, your average is actually affected. But as you see, it's not affected. So the overall mean age was around 12 in the median age was 13. And when you look at it for each of those, really the mean age is underage. For rape was 11, 10, 13 years of age, and child molestation was 11.9. The mean age was the unable to consent. Obviously, that's when children start to drink. The mean age was 18.2. Attempt rape was 14.2. And then when we break down the age distribution, overall, as I said, nearly 95% were underage. However, when you look at it by different age distribution, the majority lie between 12 and 17, followed by under 12. So that's really a disturbing fact. And exploring further in terms of number of sexual assault experiences, the majority of them were single event by one person, followed by multiple events by the same person. So those two really constitute the majority. 60% of the perpetrator were male, nearly 75% were greater than 18, more than 18 years of age, nearly 80% victimized by someone known, and about 3% reported use of weapons, and nearly 9% reported injury. And this is the help-seeking behavior. Although people, 58%, talk to someone, really in terms of talking to professional counselor or a doctor or hotline, it wasn't really significant, or it wasn't a good number at all, and only 6% reported to the police. Now looking at our correlates, as you see here, the younger the age, the more likely to report. So the younger people reported more. We're not so sure whether they are reporting more or is it happening more among young people. Really, it's hard to tell from the study. However, you know, we have to entertain both possibilities. And also, as actually lower education is protective, and as we know, in college campuses, it's kind of more common, and that could be probably the reason. And also looking at the adverse consequences, this is really an independent, as we're looking at depression as an outcome and suicide as an outcome. And looking at that, men who were sexually assaulted were 3.4 times more likely to be depressed compared to those who are not assaulted. And males who are assaulted were 2.4 times more likely to be ideate suicide compared to the to those who are not assaulted, but we didn't see any significant difference in terms of drug use, alcohol use, or impacting their marital status or education status. I'm not presenting it here, but it wasn't significant. So some of the strength of the study is it was a population-based study and focused on multiple forms of sexual assault, and basically, it provided a great information about male sexual assault, which we didn't have. Some of the limitations include the low response rate. However, given even the behavior risk factor assessment survey for Virginia, it's only 40.9%. And with a sensitive question like this, 21%, I can take that. And when you look at the behavior risk factor assessment survey, which wasn't really a sensitive question, it ranges from state to state, and the lowest was 22.1. So given the situation with telephone surveys, 21% was not as bad. And also we wanted to do some mixed methods in terms of getting additional data. However, due to lack of money, we weren't able to do that. And of course, this data excludes men who don't have phones or who are institutionalized. So that group might have actually a higher prevalence, and that would impact the study. If we had included them, of course, our rates would have been higher. It was self-reported, so I would say more under-reporting than over-reporting, so that would also be an impact. And because of the cross-sectional nature of the study, really causal association may not be a possibility. So in conclusion, sexual victimization is a major problem, particularly among childhood, and the consequences are grave, like depression and suicide. We should be able to target, actually, in terms of primary prevention, to boys, in my opinion, and also further investigation need to be done, employing various methods to actually explore further. Thank you.
We have time for a question. Yes?
Important question. I had the same feeling when I started doing it, but because of lack of money, we didn't have any incentives at all. I know. So we didn't give them anything, but it happened. Nothing. Nothing. The only thing that we told them is how important it is. We just briefly told them, you know, this is a study that we wanted to conduct and how it would impact and how it's under... people don't know anything about the problem, and we would like to explore whether it exists or not. So if they would be willing, and actually the consent procedure, when we started it, I was absolutely worried about it because we had to do the consent, and also, you know, the consent has to happen, you know, in different phases because it was a very sensitive question. IRB wouldn't approve it. And if it wasn't for that, actually, we could have had a better response rate. But that was the only thing we told them, really, just telling them how important it is. That's all. Nothing else. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Yes. Actually, we have submitted this one for publication. It's not published. The Woman actually was published already. It's on, I think, Journal of Women's Health is the one, the Woman's Survey, which actually similar to the Oklahoma study that we did, and we looked at outcomes, and I also did another one looking at PTSD in women. So those are published. So if you look at them, Medline search, you'll find them. And this one is available... through APHA. So the PowerPoint is going to be available, and if you need more